Welcome to the Competitive 40K Podcast, brought to you by Vanguard Tactics. It's our mission to help you play, progress, and perform at this incredible game of Warhammer 40K, keeping sportsmanship and fair play at its absolute core. I'm your host, Dave Colmell, a prison inmate who was experimented on by those who held him, who now finds himself gifted with super strength and unbreakable skin. Here today to partner up with me as a fellow hero for hire is a student of the Lost City of Kunlun, a martial arts master, as well as the founder of Vanguard Tactics. He's the Danny Rand to my Luke Cage, Mr. Steven Box. Steve, how's it going?
Dave, I am doing okay. I'm going to go with just a solid okay. That's what I'm going to go with this week. How are you doing?
I am doing okay. You obviously had a bit of a rough go last week after we recorded because you got in a car accident. But fortunately, you seem to be recovering okay.
Yeah, somebody decided to 1 CP in tank shock. Luckily, I passed all my feel no pains. However, my car didn't. So it's been quite a stressful week, but I'm alive. And that's probably the most important thing, I would say. Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. You didn't roll a one when you got out of your transport. So that was good.
Yeah, I didn't roll a one. Everybody else in the vehicles were also okay. But now it's just that horrible process of having to pay all the, like, you got to pay this excess fee until we can claim your money back, all that rubbish. So anyway, that's me. So, but I don't want to talk about it. So we're going to just get on with an epic show today, aren't we?
Yes, we are going to talk about two things today. First and foremost, you and I are going to both be starting new factions, new armies to move into, to get something, because you've been doing Black Templar since the start of 10th. I've been doing Tau since the start of 10th. We both need a fresh change. So we're going to be talking about that. And at the end, we got a listener question that kind of calls back to the episode that I did with Matt Laura when we talked about LVO and gotcha moments. But before we get into all of that, if you would, everybody, don't forget to like, share, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review if you would be so kind. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. Steve is on there at the Vanguard Tactics. I'm on there at Infantry Lawyer 40K. Don't forget to check out the Competitive Warhammer 40K Community Facebook page. We need a new password, Steve.
Ooh. What was it last time?
Junith.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What should we go with? You can pick.
Oh, okay. Let's pick... I'm trying to go through all the ones that I've already picked that I don't want to go through again. Let's do Gazgul, because there should be an Orc Codex theoretically coming soon. It seems that's the most logical conclusion based on the roadmap. So let's go with Gazgul.
Gaz can be short.
Or Gaz can be short. Yeah, I know. Or you guys can get really creative with your spelling, which quite often a lot of our new members send me very funny password spellings, and it's hilarious. Everybody has a good time with that. So Gaz or Gazgul, either one is acceptable or some approximation thereof. And then there's one other thing we were going to talk about, and I will think of it later. So we'll do it when we come up to some kind of a break. So for now.
Yes.
Let's talk about starting a new faction or when you're just starting out in 40K. How do we start building a list and how do we start getting into the game? So,
yeah, I think for me, I think we can all start at different entry points, right? I think you've obviously stumbled across this show because you've probably got an interest in 40K, and you've probably stumbled into Warhammer because you've found it, whether someone's told you about it, whether you've watched some battle reports and you thought, what on earth are they? Oh, actually, this looks all right. I might watch a bit more of this. Or maybe you've, I don't know, heard Henry Cavill's doing a TV series on it and you think, oh, I'll get on the hype. Or I don't know, whatever it might be. Maybe you played Dawn of War. Maybe you've listened to some, you know, heresy books. So I think everybody's entry point might be different. You might have walked into a gaming store and gone, they're really cool things. What are they? That's a Tyranid. Oh, maybe not then. Whatever, you know, each to their own. But my point is, I think the most important thing is whatever draws you to a faction should probably be the thing that kind of inspires you to continue with it in so many different ways. And I want to be able to see people's armies that have been influenced by, you know, that kind of origin story, really. So if you look at my Black Templars, you'll see a really cool converted Sigismund because I love the lore around Sigismund. He's one of my favorite characters in the Heresy series, and I really want to see him on the tabletop. So that's kind of like a non-negotiable for me. And I'm going to use that term quite a lot, which is a non-negotiable. You know, when we're talking about, you know, goal setting, this morning I had a long chat with Jordan about goals because he, you know, just kind of, I think, was a little bit maybe a little bit down at the moment about 40K in kind of talking about, you know, where Blood Angels are and all the rest of it as a faction. So we're going to be doing a YouTube video on that. And maybe that could be a really interesting podcast at some point, is how do you actually appropriately set goals so you can stay motivated. But when we're looking at actually starting a faction, what is it, Dave, that you personally like? Is it the lore? Is it the models? Is it just something different? What floats your boat, Dave?
Usually it's the look of the models and combined with the lore. There has to be something in there that catches my attention both visually and then, but I also want to feel like I'm playing a faction that's got some, because I'm an old school D&D player before I ever found 40K. So I want some backstory. I want a little bit of lore to motivate me both in my hobbying and in my playing.
Okay, cool. So for me, I would probably say that's very similar. I like an army that I can resonate with. I think that's the important thing for me. I have to be able to resonate with the army, which is typically why I like Space Marines, because, you know, not that I think I'm some, you know, knight in space, but, you know, I probably am. So, or whether it's something in which, I don't know, I just see as something that I can really get on board with. So, for example, in the World Eaters, I think they're brilliant as an army. I love the fact that the miniatures are sculpted in a particular way of having loads of muscles. I like going to the gym. I like muscles. So therefore, it just all fits pretty well. Same for Blood Angels. They've got incredible six packs on those Sanguinary Guard. Instantly appeals to me. So, you know, whatever it is, if you like big old Gribblies and you like Tyranids, that's absolutely cool. So yeah, whatever that sort of appeal is, that's brilliant. And that should be the starting point, in my opinion, because you're going to be more motivated in the long term. Long term, we're talking about making an investment today. We're talking about investing into an army, not talking about meta chasing, which is where you just buy the latest 2000 point hotness because you've seen it online and you've bought it exactly. You've, you know, painted it up to the bare bones minimum. And even that's questionable. You're putting it on the table to do what you can with it at a tournament. And then you might sell it 3 months later or put it on the shelf and start something new. Now, I am not, by the way, saying in any way, shape or form, that is a bad thing and that you shouldn't do it. I personally don't like that. And it's not something I would recommend you do. What we're talking about is how do you get fully invested in a faction over, you know, what could be the next 10 years, Dave, right? Like, how long have you been collecting Tau?
Since I want to guess 2005, 2006.
Wow. It's quite an investment.
Yeah.
I've been collecting Black Templars. My first models were actually ever my first models years and years ago. And it was nice to actually revisit that hobby project, you know, over this last year. So I've stuck with it all year. And it was actually one of the comments at the recent tournament I was at when people were playing against me using Black Templars. They're like, oh, wow, you've got a lot of reps in with this army, haven't you? I was like, yeah. And it really shows having that experience to be like a kind of faction expert. And that's what you'll get known to be in your local area, in your local club. People will come to you and ask you for help on that faction or even how to play against that faction. And that's really nice, right? We all like that kind of gratification off other people or, you know, compliments on the way that we've painted our army because we've got better and better at painting that same color scheme, or we've, you know, just become the go-to person about insert faction, right? So that's really, really cool. So we've got the models that we ideally like, because you're going to have to like them because you're going to have to paint a lot of them. That also means you need to like the color scheme. That's super important as well. I think the hobby aspect gets really overlooked, but if you get hobby burnout from painting, you're not going to ever finish the project, I don't think. And you'll just end up collecting something else because you have to play with a painted army. So
yep.
We can't forget the hobby aspect. Yeah. And that's actually one thing I've been really, really struggling with my new faction. But Dave, what's the faction that you're going to be playing?
So I really, my first love really, ever since they came out last, what, a year or so ago, or yeah, almost a year and a half ago, was Votann. But we don't have a codex yet. And I'm guessing that when they do come out with a codex for 10th edition, they're probably going to have some new units. So I don't want to get too stuck in on Votann yet. I'm waiting to see what they're going to release. So in the meantime, I have a whole bunch of Necron models that I got sort of secondhand and by chance that I've gathered up over the last few years. So I've decided I want to play, including a monolith, and I very much want to get that monolith on the table. So I've decided I'm going to play Necrons.
Okay, cool. Nice. Perfect. So when we think about then your army, now you do have a codex, so you've got some slight different decisions to make when it actually comes to, I suppose, building out the army in detachments. But even before we get to the technical stuff, because the rules might change, you know, over the years, whatever, in points, no doubt go up, go down, as per Games Workshop feel like, you know, because in order to bring the game into balance, is there a model that you think this absolutely has to be in my army, which we call a non-negotiable?
Yes, I love the Egyptian themes of the undead and the, you know, and the, just the, all the very Egyptian aesthetic that the Necrons have. And so I absolutely have to play with a monolith.
Cool. You got to take your pyramid.
Yep. Got to take my pyramid, my big floating pyramid of doom. I want it.
Okay, cool. So having such like a model like that, you now, that might kind of, and especially because it's such a big centerpiece, it's a lot of points. Really, we need to be basing the army around the monolith and making sure that the monolith feels like that feature piece for us. Now, when you're putting your army list together, of course, you know, there isn't that many restrictions. You need a warlord. So you need some sort of character model that is going to be your warlord. And then obviously you need to fill out 2000 points worth of miniatures. And then also you can't take more than three of the same data sheet unless it's battle line or a transport. So they're kind of your, I suppose, inclusion, exclusions criteria. So you've got a lot of flexibility, but is there any other kind of units you really like, Dave?
I really like the centerpiece model kind of thing. So, and I happen to have, as a gift from one of my best friends, the Silent King. Because you got me that as a gift. And so I would like, and I put in a ton of time and effort on the Silent King so far. I'm really happy with how, even though it's not done, I'm already absolutely loving the way it's painted. So I really like the idea of possibly putting in the Silent King. It's not as much a non-negotiable as the monolith, but I want to try playing with it on the table and getting out there and seeing how it's going to work.
Okay, cool. So they're quite two substantial large monoliths. And God, that friend of yours, he sounds like a nice guy. So anyway.
He is.
Yeah. Okay. Is that about it? Anything else jumping out at you through the book you like?
I like the idea of having, you know, like I said, the idea of the undead aspect, the skeletons coming back to life. So if possible, I'd like to get, you know, at least one big brick of 20 Necron warriors out there to die and come back and die and come back and all that. And then, yeah, I think that's about it. Everything else are, you know, I like the walkers, the Doomstalkers and the Cryptic Reanimators. I like those are a cool looking model as well, but again, not as must have as having the Necron warriors, just having a good big brick of Necron warriors out there to act as a big screen and to have some good resilience.
Okay, cool. So next question for you then. So we've established the models you like.
Yep.
What are you trying to achieve? What would you say like are, you know, some goals for you? Is it just to complete 2000 points to have it painted so you could play some, you know, friendly games with your wife, Shauna, or, you know, maybe go down to a local club and just have a pickup game? Is that like the outcome that you want? Is it, okay, you want to take this to tournaments and maybe try and win best in faction? Is it you want to try and, you know, improve on your performance that you've done with Tau at tournaments? I'm not too into the win rate side of things because I don't think you should put your success on a win rate of one tournament because I don't think it's a good enough well-rounded approach to look at, you know, your success. So what, any sort of goals that jump out to you?
So my goals would be, first off, to be really proud of how it looks on the table. That was actually my first goal. And second off is I want to go and I want to enjoy the game because I wasn't really enjoying Tau. So I really want to go and refine my enjoyment of playing the game at tournaments and still do reasonably well, but make sure that I, you know, I go and I give, you know, a good, reasonable competition to anybody that I, you know, that I play at a tournament. But yes, this is going to be a tournament army eventually.
Okay. So what was it about Tau that you didn't enjoy? Because maybe we don't want to fall into those same, you know, issues because let's say you were like, oh, it's just having one phase of the game. Well, let's make sure we build some combat units in. All right. So obviously you're at a slightly different place because you've already played an army. Some people will be completely new. They won't know what we call their play style. But it's obviously a good point to think about is, do you want an army that is super aggressive on the table, that hits people in combat? You know, do you like the idea of swords and shields and big axes? Or do you like this idea of really incredibly good laser cannons? Or do you want to shoot that somebody just indirectly, whatever that your kind of vibe is, because that's kind of how we want to build out most of our list. And then what we're going to start to do is plug in units to fulfill, you know, all the other elements that we need. So we need to be able to play the mission. We need to be able to hold primary. We need to be able to deny our opponent's primary. We need to be able to deny our opponent's secondaries. We need to make sure that we don't give up too many secondary points as well. We also need to be able to ensure that we can kill and destroy a huge range of different units, from lots of little gribblies all the way up to massive big monsters and vehicles. So we need to plug all those little gaps. We need to have tools in the toolbox to do all those things. So
yeah,
Dave, what was it about Tau, the playstyle, specifically intent, that you didn't enjoy? Because we don't want to repeat that mistake.
Right. And I think it was very much, like you said, it was very much the, they only function in two phases of the game.
Okay.
And it, and I want a little bit more dynamic involvement. There's so much more to the game, especially with combat, that I want to, that I want to get into and take advantage of those other phases of the game. And I also think that makes it a better, makes me a better opponent, because I've heard a lot of people say that they just don't like playing into Tau. Even my non-hyper competitive lists that I've taken to tournaments, they're just, it's boring, because then it's shooting phase. All right, they're going to stand there for 15 minutes while I roll dice and just tell them what to pick up.
Yeah.
That's not a good experience for my opponents to have either. So I want to give them more of an interactive experience too.
Okay, cool. Good. Like it. Okay, cool. So do you like the idea then of really tough, durable units, which might be slightly more reliant on, you know, how well you roll dice? Or do you prefer like lots of little units that can go in, do the job, but if you misplay them, you're going to be extremely punished? What's kind of your you know, vibe? Do you like lots of small fragile units or big durable units, or do you want a mixture?
Probably a mixture, leaning more towards larger, more durable units.
Okay, cool. So like the monolith, obviously that's going to be an absolute staple. So we might be then leaning towards more of a, you know, like we said, vehicle-based list specifically. Now, obviously, we want to make sure we've got some, you know, combat units in there so you can kind of explore the rest of that out. So if we start with the monolith, we need to then think, what is the best detachment? So obviously, your book is going to have what we call an army rule. So you're going to get reanimation protocols as your army rule.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this basically allows you to either add wounds back to a model or wounds back to your unit. And that's going to be the same for no matter whatever you play. There's going to be some units that benefit a lot more from reanimation than others. And if you really like that mechanic, then obviously we can kind of accelerate that even further. But then you also get detachments. And in your detachment, you get your detachment rule. You get all the different enhancements. There's four to choose from. You can take up to three. And these are basically upgrades that you can give non-epic hero characters just to kind of give them some extra spice, which might affect them or the unit. And then, of course, you get your six stratagems to play with throughout the game in different phases of the game. And if you've listened to any of our previous Codex reviews, then you'll kind of have a really good understanding. And what might be really good is, if you are listening to this for the first time and you want to find out more about Necrons, then do go out and check out those podcasts. We are going to do a Codex review for every single you know, Codex that does come out. We've looked at all the different indexes. And if you want to really up level and skill yourself, we actually have on the Vanguard Tactics website page a place to get the Faction Masterclass series, where you can get a subscription series to us where we've got like loads and loads and loads of videos all around one particular, you know, army. So Necrons, we've completely covered Space Marines, Admech, you know, Tyranids, Dark Angels. We're currently in development of the Tau one. So we go over absolutely everything. It's amazing if you play that faction or just want to learn how to play against it so you can avoid any gotcha moments. But that is something that you need to pick, is your detachment. Have you read through them, Dave? Is there anything that you think this kind of appeals to me?
Yeah, I loved the Hypercrypt Legion detachment. I like the movement shenanigans that they get, and obviously that entire detachment is built around the monolith, so it naturally feeds into what I want to do with the monolith, of being able to, you know, bring units in and out and around it and teleporting her in and out and around it. So,
And the Hypercrypt is one of the more popular competitive options because of its kind of mobility factor and the ability that it plays the mission specifically well. So because what this allows you to do is up to three units, you're allowed to take them off the table, right? At the end of your opponent's turn, then you can bring them back on, which is really good. And then you've got some enhancements and stratagems that kind of emphasize that even further. And there's an amazing stratagem here for specifically the monolith, right? Where you can basically give it a 4+ invulnerable save to make it super durable. So what we're doing is we're leaning into an approach that's built around our non-negotiable. Now, you've obviously chosen the monolith and the Hypercrypt Legion is the one that is going to be best off with that. So then what we want to do is think about, okay, well, what units can use the monolith? What role does the monolith have on the battlefield for us? So therefore, what requirements do we need to build around it to either keep it safe or to do the job that it doesn't do? So what is it then about the monolith that you would sort of summarize as its role on the tabletop? You know, does it kill things? Is it really good at holding objectives? What's the purpose of the monolith? Because then we can look at the other units that we need to support it.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it has an OC of 8, so it does reasonably well hold one objective. And it does have some good firepower, so it does kill some things. But I think its best asset is the fact that you can teleport things out of that Eternity Gate less than 9 inches away from enemies. So you can really facilitate moving your other units forward onto the table. You can deep strike the monolith itself if possible, and you can really use the monolith as a pivot point for the rest of your army.
Okay, nice. Sounds good. What's its ranged like? What's its ranged attacks?
It's got a 36-inch, the big crystal. Yeah, yeah. The death rays are 24, and then the crystal on top is also 24. The particle whip is also 24, so they're both 24 inches.
Okay, and the four death rays that you've got are sustained D3, so it's four shots. It's strength 12 minus 4, D6 plus 1, so it's kind of got four las cannons, but you would hope that one in four you get a 6. It's not going to happen every time, but you know, probably at least every other turn you'll hit a sustain, so you might proc a few more hits there. And that's pretty good. So it's got a good anti-vehicle monster sort of profile there, which is good. And then it's also got a nice little melee output as well. 6 attacks, which is enough to defend an objective with. If anybody charges you, they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. They're going to lose a few models. And hopefully that's where your OC8 comes in and still holds the objective for you. So I think we've got a few different roles here. So if we have a look then, the next thing we need to kind of take a look at is a leader for your army. Is there any particular ones that you really like? Any named characters? You know, if we feel like, we're going to be spending a lot of stratagems, maybe we could look at Imatek the Stormlord, because actually he gives your army a CP. So if you know that you're going to be spending at least 3 CPs in a battle round, then you're going to definitely need Imatek. So that's what we mean. This is what I mean by building in these little add-ons to help you plug in any gaps, basically.
Yeah, and the Hypercrypt Legion has some really great stratagems. So obviously having the extra CP from Imatek would be fantastic. So I absolutely think that Imatek is a necessary, at least for early iterations of this list, to make sure that I can do some of the stratagems consistently.
Yeah, and that's also another point to make is you can start with a model like Imatek, and then as you get better at your command point use and you've got a better strategy for spending your command points, you can probably take him out later on down the line and then replace him and his points with another unit that might be slightly more sort of useful for you, potentially. But that being said, even if we're just taking him on his own, and he's just sitting on a backfield, he's pretty durable as a 6 wound, toughness 5, 2+, 4+ character, who's just kind of basically on our backfield objective. That's probably okay. Or we can have him lead a unit. So we could have him lead some Immortals, some Lich Guard, or some Necron Warriors. So the Lich Guard are a combat-based unit, and we could have him leading them so that, therefore, when they actually do get into combat, then you've got that kind of nice little combat punch and hopefully keep him alive So that's also an option. Obviously, you can have this unit then come through the teleportarium. That's kind of inbuilt into the monolith. But if you do that, so that turn, you're not going to get his command points. That is something you need to factor in. If you want to go for that tactic, you're not actually getting the best from him because he needs to be on the battlefield in order to give you a CP. So we need to think about that. You kind of want him baked into a unit where he's not going to die and he can always be on the tabletop. So there might be other characters we want to bring in so that they can actually benefit the Lich Guard, which might be that combat unit we want to use to come out of the monolith instead. So that's a consideration that you're going to want to make, okay?
Mm-hmm. And I do own 5 Lich Guard.
Cool. So Lich Guard, for me, really then what we want to do is make that deciding point. If we're going to take them, are we going to take 5 or are we going to take 10? If we're not going to take Lich Guard, do we take Destroyers? Like, what do you prefer for a combat threat?
I do own 6 Scorpec Destroyers and the Scorpec Lord as well.
Okay.
So I was thinking about using the Lich Guard as a bodyguard for Imhotek and then putting all 6 Scorpecs in one squad with the Scorpec Lord as a big melee punch threat that I can use either coming out of the monolith or just skittering forward on their own.
Yeah, okay. I know, I like them coming out of a monolith, sounds pretty good. And then charging. So yeah. That sounds like a good play. I think with the Lich Guard, I think it's probably 10 or none. You know, if you take Imhotek by himself, just as your backfield holder, just as something to hold up, you know, your home objective. You're probably okay with that. Like, somebody's going to really struggle to kill him with an indirect gun.
Mm.
So that is something to consider for the points of the Lich Guard and the extra wounds. I don't know if you're really going to get the benefits from it. I mean, if you take 10 Lich Guard, now all of a sudden their combat potential really starts to ramp up a little bit because I just don't think 5 is going to be enough. And also it's not like your characters that you've got in your army are that kind of killy and they don't really do enough damage by themselves. What you're looking for is accumulation of damage from the character and the unit. Now, some armies like my Space Marine Black Templar army, I take 5 intercessors. Assault intercessors to literally buff up one of my captains. And I'm literally letting the captain do all the work. And then the assault intercessors are there just for some extra kind of attacks. But your characters aren't that good in combat. So what we're looking for is the damage output of the unit. And I think that's really where we need to lean into 10 of these because I don't think 5 is going to do the job.
Okay.
So that might be like something to buy later down the line is
later on.
Just 5.
Yeah.
5 more Lich Guard to make that a 10-man unit, okay?
Okay.
So we've got our home field objective being held by Imhotek so far. We've got the monolith in. We've got a combat unit. So now we want to consider something else you said earlier about like the kind of the warriors, right? How are we going to have this kind of undead feel to the army? And you said about the 20 Necron warriors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked in the book to see any ways that you can really get the most out of 20 Necron Warriors? Like, how do we really lean into reanimation protocols? What do we need?
Yeah, so they already get to reroll their reanimation protocol dice. So either giving them using maybe a canoptic reanimator or having a resurrection orb nearby so that they can reroll those dice or have extra dice to reroll would be good. Okay. Also having a chronomancer in there in the squad gives them an innate -1 to be hit. And so that can also help with some of their durability so that when they don't lose quite as many models every turn. And when they do reanimate, those models will last a little longer that they're getting back.
Right. Okay, cool. So you can basically take a Technomancer, a Psychomancer, a Chronomancer, or a Plasmancer, and they can all join Necron Warriors, and they can also join them even if you've got an attached Royal Warden or Noble. So yeah, you've got the Chronomancer, which gives you -1 to hit, but also when you shoot, you can also make another normal move. That's very, very good because obviously what that means is you can kind of deep strike down if you were to use this in a deep striking unit, shoot and then move. And that means, do you have an ability to drop down within 3 inches by any chance?
I do have a stratagem that allows me to drop down within 3 inches, and I have an enhancement then I have an enhancement that allows a unit that doesn't normally deep strike to be able to deep strike.
Okay, cool. So that now this means you can deep strike this unit down just outside of 3 inches. And then you can obviously move it 5, which is amazing for stealing objectives when you're an OC2 unit, which is really, really good. The only issue or drawback we've got with this strategy is the physical footprint of 20 Necron Warriors, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, it's a lot of bodies.
But it's not a bad way to spend an enhancement is on a 20 model strong unit. Obviously, if we're going to invest in enhancements, we may as well put it in durable units where we're going to get the most from them. Okay, so the Psychomancer is not a bad idea for that kind of tactic in particular. You've also got the Technomancer that gives your unit a 5+ feel no pain. That makes this unit just stick around a lot more. You've also then got at the end of your phase, you can then select one friendly Necrons model and then regain D3 wounds as well. But how many wounds does a warrior have?
Just one.
Okay, so really he's going to have to be, the Technomancer could be healing the monolith every single turn at the end of the movement phase.
Yes.
So the Technomancer gives warriors a 5+ feel no pain, and then will be the monolith will be using reanimation and then being healed by the Technomancer. So that's not a bad strategy either. So it's whether we need the Chronomancer for the additional kind of maneuverability a bit, or do we want just more survivability with the Technomancer?
Yeah. My thinking was the Chronomancer because I like the additional movement and the -1 to hit, I'm hoping will, because it works both in shooting and melee, it'll allow my unit to live to stick around long enough for reanimation protocols to matter. If the unit gets right. picked up, you know, the Technomancer also has similar benefits, can do similar things, just doesn't have the movement.
Yeah. So the Technomancer, the 5+ feel no pain is stronger because you're going to save 33% of the damage that is inflicted to your unit. Whereas a -1 to hit, I think is only like 18% that you're taking off. Now, obviously some people can ignore hit roll modifiers. Also, some yeah. people can get full rerolls to hit. So the -1 to hit might not be as relevant. And also, the 5+ feel no pain is terrible against multi-damage weapons, right? Like damage 3, damage 2, because then you need to roll 2 dice in order and pass both to survive. But that does mean if your opponent is shooting their heavy multiple damage at your unit of Necrons, Warriors, they're not shooting that at the thing they should be, which is probably the monolith. So
right.
The guns that are more likely to kill the Necron Warriors are actually single shot weapons, because that's when they're most efficient, but that's when your 5+ feel no pain is really going to come into, you know, save you, I think. So I think if you want a more steady advancing Necron Warrior unit to be kind of on the middle of the table, holding the middle objective with 40 OC, and then with a monolith nearby, which you can keep on healing, then you could use it as like an anchor unit.
Okay.
The issue with that is then you need to kind of think about a lord or a noble. So have you looked at any of the lords or nobles?
Yes, I have the, I own the lord. I own both of the lord characters. The overlords. The only one I don't own is the new one with the translocation shroud. I don't own that one yet, but he's cool because he allows the units to move through terrain. So he's good for if the unit's going to be moving steadily forward to pass through terrain and maybe get up the board a little faster.
Yeah. And he gives your unit auto advance 6.
Yeah.
He for me is the absolute best one. Cause they both get my will be done. He's not quite as damaging. Like, he doesn't have the Tachyon's arrow, which is a once per game incredible shot hitting on a 2, but you'll probably roll a 1 anyway, because it's always the way, apparently.
Yeah.
From everything I've ever seen. You've also got, then obviously the other abilities, which the Translocation Lord gets, they both get My Will Be Done. So yeah, and you can also both take a resurrection orb on either one. So that's kind of all balanced out basically. And the resurrection orb just once per battle allows you to kind of reanimate D6 rather than D3, and obviously you can re-roll that as well because you're a Necron Warrior unit. So I think it's definitely worth putting an Overlord in, because you can then target your unit with stratagems that are battle tactics for zero CPs. So is there any battle tactic stratagems that we think are really good that we're going to use on the Necron Warriors?
Let's see which ones are battle tactics. There's not.
So then we can kind of write off that ability then, can't we? It's not really that useful for us.
Yeah.
So we need to
the
think.
The only ones would be Overwatch is a, you know, if we're going to, we can go back to the generic ones.
That's not a battle tactic though.
Oh, that's right. They changed. That used to be, I think they changed it.
So
it's a CP reroll.
Yeah. It's not great.
Confusing anyway. Yeah.
So then what we want to think about is there anything else? So we've got Orokhan the Diviner. He gives your unit a 4+ invulnerable save. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
But you wouldn't be able to put any enhancements on him. And he also can't heal your monolith either.
Yeah. There's also Illuminar Zaris. Again, you can't put an enhancement on him, but he has the aura of Armor of Contempt.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like that. I like the sound of that a lot. That sounds good. And then you've got the Trazan the Infinity, or the Infinite, should I say. When he's leading a unit, you actually, that objective remains under your control. That's pretty good. What I like about him is with a small unit, that allows you to then basically bring him in anywhere on the table, 3 inches away, maybe onto an objective. Maybe you've kind of landed, then use that 5-inch move just with a small unit, just to kind of sticky objectives could be quite good. But you don't really want to kind of engage this model that much, because you want him really as a tech piece, basically. You want him helping another unit.
He's not super durable. He doesn't really put out much in the way of damage. So his only real benefit is his one attack is melee and it doesn't have any AP. So yeah. I feel like his only real benefit is the sticky objective thing.
Yeah, exactly that. So we need to weigh up like how much is that really worth to us versus the units that you've got already and the probability that you'll be able to drop him where you need to and take objectives when you want. So I don't think he's necessarily an essential piece. So we know that the overlords aren't going to work great because you don't have any battle tactic stratagems. So let's take a look then at what about a catacomb command barge? Because that gives you a resurrection orb, but it's a friendly unit within 6 can use it, not just your unit. So that's not bad either. Rather than it just being on your unit. So we could look at the Catacomb Command Barge. And while a friendly Necrons unit is within 6, you add 1 to the OC characteristic of that model's unit, which is amazing. So then that means your monolith goes to OC 9 and all your warriors go to OC 3 each, which means if you were ever in a situation where you needed to take the middle objective or storm hostile objectives, then you can put this Necron unit warrior down. And all of a sudden just put a huge amount of OC on that. So I think the Catacomb Command Barge could be the way that we bring in the Resurrection Orb, but whilst getting some other really cool benefits as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. And it's a cool looking model. It's an overlord basically on his giant floating throne with 2 little toadies piloting it for him. So yeah, I like it.
Okay, cool. And he's got some like a range of profiles that you can obviously take as well. Okay, what about then the Royal Warden? So this guy's not bad. He allows you to shoot and charge in a turn which you fell back. And also once per battle at the start of any phase, you can select 1 Necrons unit that's battle shocked within 12, and then you're no longer battle shocked. So I think he could be actually really good because he can join the unit alongside that Chronomancer or Technomancer, and then that means, because this Necron Warrior unit, I think the biggest issue with them is when somebody, you know, just gets into combat with you. They just charge in, knowing that you're not going to kill them in combat. They'll take off a few, but it's going to stop you from shooting. I think having this ability is going to be really, really good. Just you can step back and constantly keep firing. So I would look at a Royal Warden, Catacomb Command Barge, and either the Technomancer or the Chronomancer.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, because now I've got this big brick of warriors in the middle of the table. You know, if I'm playing into something like orcs or world eaters, they'll catch a charge for me really well and likely at least survive a little bit. And against less melee intense armies, they can screen out movement really well because they take up such a big chunk of real estate. And I think we've given them some really good tools to be resilient and not just to get either tied up in combat and not doing anything, or and still be, and you know, increase their chances of healing and all that. So yeah, no, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be definitely the best option. And hopefully people, you know, if you're listening to this, you can kind of really see the thought process behind, you know, the decisions that we're making. You know, we're thinking about, okay, what's the unit we want from it? You know, we've got this monolith to hold objectives for us and provide some good ranged output against sort of those tanks and monsters. And then we've got like this big unit of warriors, which we're going to support to try and keep it alive, keeping with Dave's theme of like having this undead army that's going to keep like regenerating models. So having that 5+ feel no pain on there, or -1 to hit, whichever you prefer, is going to really sort of pay off. And we're kind of what we're like doubling down on that ability. So rather than just having one ability, every time we stack a new one on it, it just actually makes the first ability that little bit stronger as well, because it's like a combined effect. And it also makes it like not very appealing for your opponent to kind of target. They're like, oh, I'm not even going to bother because I'm just not going to kill it. So therefore they don't try, and they try and kill other stuff instead. So I think that's really, really good to look at these different units and think, right, what's its purpose on the table? And then you've got things like, okay, cool, maybe some Tomb Blades that can scout 9, you know, a great little unit, 2OC that can also like move after it's shot, which I actually think if you want that ability, the Tomb Blades is the best unit, because it can drop down, shoot and move 6 on a very cheap unit that can go and steal objectives with OC2 each. So I think personally, in a hypercrypt army, you know, 2 to 3 units of Tomb Blades to sort of help play the mission and steal other opponents' objectives is going to be really key. And we can then use all these as well just to help us, you know, kill off any sort of little units or any little gribblies where they're super easy to kill, but number of shots is absolutely paramount. We've got our big combat unit. And then it's just a case of kind of seeing what works, especially when you begin, is to try out that list with minimal units, but maybe multiplied, and then go, okay, I like that unit, maybe 1's enough, or I like that unit, I definitely need 3 of those. And then that way you can really start to get the reps in with that list. And even if you're practicing with just kind of bases, and saying, you know, when you're playing against your friends, hey, look, I've got 16 Necron Warriors. This is 20, this is 20, this is 20. Because then that way you'll really get the most from them. You can test out which is better, the Chronomancer, or the Plasmancer, or the Technomancer, or whoever else. You can just test them all out, maybe have one on each squad. So you keep the unit the same. It's just one character change, which is the different thing. And that's kind of what I'd recommend. So anyway, Dave, is that giving you some insights on maybe next steps for your list?
Yeah, no, that helps me a lot. I think that gives me a lot of good ideas on where to tweak the little outline sketch that I already had and improve. And yeah, it's going to give me some real good places to start my practice games on. So now let's talk about what your ideas, because you're going to move into Sisters. So let's flip the script here a little bit. And what's drawing you to Sisters, or in this case, kind of back to Sisters?
Yeah, I think for me, it's an army that I absolutely loved. When I first saw their plastic range come out, I just thought it was absolutely incredible. I've always wanted a Sisters army when I was younger, but they were all metal at the time. And I felt like I painted an army very quickly. I didn't really do it the justice I wanted. I played it for an entire season back in, I think late of last, sort of when last edition of 8th. And then
yeah,
I think I played it for a full season of 9th, but my army's a bit battered up and I just feel like my painting's come a long, long way. And I want to get this army over the line. So this is going to be an army that I'm going to be working with Siege on. So they're going to be painting the bulk of it, but I want to be able to sort of co-author a color scheme where I can also add my own units to it as well. As you can probably imagine, trying to paint studio armies just to get stuff done for Codex releases or whatever is really challenging, along with trying to paint my own models. So having Siege on board in their commission painting service is absolutely incredible. So I'm really looking forward to kind of getting the army back. But I want to have flexibility to add more things in. So should we go over what I basically have ordered? Is that kind of the start point of my list? Is that a kind of good place to go, do you think?
Well, let's start real quick. Obviously you have one fact, you have your faction rule, which is the miracle dice mechanic. You only have the one detachment right now. Do you have any vanity picks, any models that you really are going to build your list around?
Oh yeah. So Morvian Val. I absolutely love Morvian Val and Celestine. I just think the models in their gold armor is absolutely incredible. So for me, yeah, they're an absolute must. A Morvian Val. Right. I remember when I first saw that model and I thought, this is one of the greatest models I've ever seen. So yeah, and that's still true now when I look at Morvian Val.
Yeah. Yeah, she's very cool. Not quite centerpiece because she's a little smaller than you normally think of as a centerpiece, but she is a badass, and yeah, it's a really cool model. So I totally get that. All right. So yeah, what other models have you ordered that you're gonna be adding to this to your collection?
So I think yeah, I wanted a real mix with this army. So I've gone for Morvian Val, gone for Celestine. I think I can paint up things like Palatines and some of the other characters myself. So what I've got is Morvian Val and Celestine. I've got two units of 10 Battle Sisters with heavy flamers and flamers. Just having a little bit of Overwatch potential there is quite nice on a unit of sisters that are predominantly probably going to be doing things like actions for me isn't a bad option. Also, the way that the boxes are built, because I've also ordered some retributors, and I think you only get two multi melters in the box. I need to be able to borrow the multi melters from this squad. So to make sure yeah. I've got one full unit of multi melters. So that's why I've gone for that. I've then got a unit of Sacrosants. I've got a unit that's like a 10 Sacrosant unit. I've got 10 Zephyrin. I've got 10 Repentia. I've got 5 retributors. I've got 2 immolators. I've got 3 paragons, like war suits to obviously go with Morvian Val. I've got the Zephyrin to go with Celestine. I've got 10 Arco flagellants, and I've got an exorcist. So I've kind of got like a real mix. I'm also going to paint 5 retributors myself to go in the immolators. And then I've also got some other little units that I want to add into the collection as well. Now, I'm just super, super excited, to just get my hands playing on them with the models, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, going through those experimental phases. I've also purchased a couple of the castigators that I'm going to paint myself, and again in a similar color scheme so I can match it as best as I possibly can. So then I can kind of experiment. I can run a couple of units of this, run a couple of units of that, see what works, take it something out, add something in. And I think I'm going to really enjoy that process of finding out what elements really work. I know I had a lot of great feedback, Dave, from when I went over my Black Templars list with you about all the different concepts, why each element's in the list and how it works and why I don't just run Redeemers like everybody else. I run the normal, Land Raiders.
Right.
And it's a question I get every single event. Oh, Steve, why not the Redeemers? And when you explain it and you see it on the table, I think it becomes quite evident. But that's what I'm looking forward to, is the working out of the army. Not knowing if it's a foregone conclusion before we've already started or whatever else. So I'm really looking forward to that aspect. And also, it's a new painting challenge. So I think the color scheme I'm going to go with is either going to be purple and orange, or it's going to be a pure gold theme to match Morvian Val. So I've got one model done. I need to paint the head. So what I'll do is I'll put that in the Facebook group. So if you join the Facebook group, you can let me know what you prefer, either a full gold version or the purple version. But I think the purple might be probably the way I'm leaning towards so far. Kind of like, think of it like an Emperor's Children sisters army, basically.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, that sort of,
yeah, that'll look nice.
That sort of color scheme of purple, because we don't have a purple army here at the channel. So what's quite nice about having different color armies is that they stand out really well on the tabletop. It's super vibrant, super bright, makes great thumbnails, and all the other stuff that we need to consider for when we're making the best battle reports we possibly can.
Makes sense.
So Dave, what is the listener question?
Yes, we did have a listener question, and this was a callback to the episode I recorded a couple of weeks ago with Matt Laura when we talked about Matt's epic run at LVO. And as anybody who heard that episode or who watched that game on Twitch will remember, in the final game, Matt played the 3-inch Necron stratagem, the 3-inch Steep Strike stratagem to bring down his monolith in Folger's backfield in his deployment zone, and then started spilling out units out of it and kind of giving the Eldar player a real bad day. J. Klaus commented in the Facebook community Facebook page that he said, "I just listened to the Matt Laura LVO discussion, and in my opinion, that was a gotcha. Matt knew his opponent was acting on incorrect information, temporary or otherwise, when measuring out his screens, and he didn't correct or warn him." So I wanted to just touch on this again, because I think this is a hugely important topic that a lot of us have questions about, either while we're in events, while we're getting ready for events. Hey, do I have to disclose this? What if I don't disclose this? And then mid game, hey, I told them about this, but maybe they've forgotten. Should I warn them again? So Matt did say, I went back and listened to the episode. Matt did say clearly that not only had he told Folger about this 3-inch deep strike ability, but Folger himself had even mentioned it before Matt had mentioned it, that he was aware of it. So with that, Steve, my question to you is, by extension of what Jay said, is that still a gotcha? And to what extent is Matt obligated as a good player to remind Folger when he's deploying, hey, don't forget I can do this?
Okay, so I think this comes into a few different aspects here. Now, at the start of the game, in a tournament, you have the opportunity to ask, you know, a few questions about your opponent's list. You've got the opportunity to ask them their 6 stratagems. And I would definitely do that is, hey, could you please tell me any enhancements you've got? What's your detachment rule? What stratagems do you have? Or any battle tactics, if that's relevant to the army or not? And then any units you've never seen before. Hey, what's their army rule? Or what does that leader do? Just ask those relevant questions that you think are necessary. Or if you know there's pertinent questions that you need to know, ask them, hey, do you have advanced in charge anywhere or whatever? Now, once you've done that, and if you didn't ask for that information at the start, you've unfortunately kind of lost your opportunity, I think, in order to get a lot of that bulk information down. Okay. Of course, you know, if you ask a question later on in the game, you know, it's your opponent's, it's on them to answer information correctly and accurately, but without giving their game plan away. And that's really, really important. I think at the end of the day, you are having a competitive match. And if we are playing football, or as some Americans might call it, soccer, I can't, if I was a goalkeeper, ask the penalty taker, oh, mate, do you like, you know, shoot into the right side or the left? Or do you just going to stick down the middle? Well, you know, what do you prefer? You know, what, you know, no. You're in a competitive environment and you need to learn from your mistakes to some degree. Now, that being said, obviously information needs to be disclosed and it needs to be transparent and verbally communicated both ways, okay? So if you know that obviously Matt and his opponent have both shared this conversation, then great. I actually really dislike it personally when my opponent will try to coach me at the table, okay? Because I don't want someone to go, oh, Steve, just so you know, by the way, you should do this or you should do that. I really dislike that because I want my own time to think. And at the end, I might go, hey, do you think I should have done anything differently? And if they then say, oh, at turn 2, you should have screened out 3 inches, not 9. Hey, that's a really good talking point at that, you know, moment. But I don't like being coached in game. I think it's something in which I personally dislike. And that would annoy me more than you actually telling me, because I'm here to learn, and I'm actually, one of the best ways to learn is from your mistakes and to actually see these combinations actually happen in front of you. And therefore they won't happen again. You know, you'll be more prepared for it, or, you know, you'll find out different ways to counter it. So, you know, I think in my eyes, was it a gotcha moment? I mean, when's 40K not? You could say any reactive based, I mean, and everything could be determined as a gotcha moment. Oh, you wanted to Overwatch then? That's a gotcha moment. You wanted to reactive move? That's a gotcha moment. You wanted to interrupt combat? Any of these things could be perceived as a gotcha moment. I think there's little nuances in which are then different when, let's say, you've given your intent to somebody And then they try and do something completely different, then that would be a gotcha moment. So if his opponent had said to him, hey, my intent is to screen out, you know, the backfield. I know you've got that 3-inch, you know, a rule. Could you help me make sure that, you know, you can't use that ability? And then if Matt doesn't really say much and he's like, yeah, you might have done that. Yeah, sure, whatever. So it kind of isn't really paying attention. And then when it comes to Matt's turn, okay, yeah, cool. I'm now going to deep strike within 3 because you've left me 3.1. Yeah, that's a gotcha moment. You've kind of deliberately been vague, and, you know, providing that it could have been screened out, that's the other thing as well. That actually obviously has to happen. When you're declaring your intent, you actually need to be able to do it. You can't just declare something, hey, it's my intent to do this, if it's not physically possible. So, yeah, I think there's a line to be drawn as well, is what stage of the tournament. It is the LVO final. It is the largest event in the world. And you're on the final round. Both players at this point are extremely experienced. They're extremely incredible players, much, much better than I am. And they're at a stage where that kind of thing, you need to be able to learn from your mistakes. What do you think, Dave?
I would agree, especially when the player says, hey, I'm aware of that rule. All right, you've acknowledged it. Now I don't have to keep reminding you, because also you don't know what's going on in his head. He might specifically have done that to try to bait in the monolith move or something. So it's not your job to sort of handhold your opponent through everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think that reminding somebody once, that's why you do the pregame discussions and sharing of information, so that, you know, if somebody forgets something after that, you made your good faith effort, but you're not there to, you know, be someone, your opponent's, you know, nanny through the whole thing either.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it's someone's first event and they go, you know, you remind them, like I was round 3 at the weekend, with me and my opponent were both undefeated at the time. And, I was able to draw a line that, you know, from my Centurions to his Lancer. And I was like, did you intend to be completely behind that terrain feature? He didn't disclose it to me. And he said, no, Steve, I didn't even think about it. If you can see me, you can see me. And I should have thought about it. I didn't think about it. And actually, I want to win the game because I deserve to, not because you gave me loads of kind of like go backs or things like that, right? Which were, now he's got new information. He wants to act differently. There's one thing like having a go back, be like, oh, you know, you get to the shooting phase or something and you forget to move a model. You're like, well, that's fine, just move it. There's nothing I would have done differently. Or you ask your opponent, hey, if I was to remove that model, would you have done anything? If they say no, then, you know, it's non-impactful. You're not, you know, working on any sort of new information. But, you know, I think that's really true. And it was great for my opponent just to go, no, I need to learn from those mistakes. And that was really refreshing to see that. So we need to kind of adopt that mindset more often, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I was at an RTT on Saturday, and my last opponent, who was actually Scott Hercules, he's one of a member of Vanguard Tactics. We had a good game, and turn one he drew investigate signals, and so he declared one of his war dog. He was playing Chaos Knights. One of his war dogs was in a corner. He was like, "All right, this guy's going to do the action to score the points," and then went through all of his movement phases. Was really kind of debating where to put his big guy, Alice, and then came back and then moved that knight up forward. And then he was just about to start his shooting phase. I said, hold up. I said, you said he was going to be doing the action. Did you change your mind or did you move him by accident? He goes, oh, that's right. I forgot. I wanted him to do the action. Can I move him back? I said, yeah, sure. That's fine. Because nothing had moved forward in the game. It wasn't going to change how things were going to, the outcome. And he had declared it. So I was just backing him up that, hey, I know you moved that guy a little accidentally. You second guessed or something. So
that's you forgot his card, right? Sometimes you forget the mission card. You get so wrapped up into, you know, units you need to kill or whatever. So, yeah, no, fair play.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, that's it. I think we're good.
Yeah, and we've got a new sponsor, which we're going to talk about next week on next week's show, but super excited to introduce them, the Baron of Dice. We're going to be also getting some VT dice as well, which would be cool. But yeah, if you do want to get kind of, you know, dice that you think might be kind of look cool to go with your army, then definitely check out the Baron of Dice, because I do think their dice are absolutely awesome. I love using them. Yeah. So anyway, Dave, thank you so much. Yeah. You've been brilliant as always.
Yep. Thanks, Steve, for continuing to let me do this with you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for giving us your time and your attention. Steve, what are we talking about next week?
I don't know. We'll put it in the Facebook group and we can have a vote.
Yeah. Oh, and just to remind everybody, I did put up a, we promised we're going to do it in the last episode, which I just uploaded today. And I have put up a poll in the 40K community Facebook page. What should we rename the episode, or what should we rename the show? And so, you know, your suggestions are welcome. Obviously Steve and I retain, final, veto power. So if you guys come up with something ridiculous, we can veto it. This is a benevolent dictatorship, not a democracy, but, yeah, give us your suggestions and let's, figure out what we're going to rename the show. And other than that, we will see you guys next week. Until then, this is Dave Colomel for Steven Box and all of Vanguard Tactics saying self-pity and a defeatist attitude will hurt your progress a lot more than ill health does. Have a good week.
See you later.